This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Bob Garfield is out this week. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Since the election of Donald J. Trump, we in the United States have become accustomed to a degree of fabulism.
I've done more for Black Americans than anybody, with the possible exception of Abraham Lincoln.
The president's self-aggrandizement provides the framework for his alternate reality.
We have one of the lowest mortality rates in the world.
We're going to take a look. We had 900 deaths on a single day.
You have the numbers, please? Because I heard we had the best mortality rate. Number one low mortality rate.
We are being given something I can't recall in my lifetime. A choice of realities. One that is mostly regarded as evidence-based, and one that you might call faith-based, that faith being in Mr. Trump. In either case, you have a sizable cohort to back you up. Truth has been displaced in many quarters by rage and fear. Over the past 4 months, we've had many opportunities to observe the impact of paranoia when deployed by a fantasist in the White House.
An Arizona man died after taking chloroquine. His wife said that they heard about it from Trump's briefings.
Are you going to allow the government to tell you you have to wear a mask?
No!
Some believe these mask orders go against their freedoms.
We will protect our rights. I will not wear a mask. Find me and I will not pay for it.
Anti-vax conspiracists have seen their numbers swell on Facebook. And doctors warn, if left unchecked, they could undermine an effective vaccine.
The death toll from the coronavirus pandemic has surpassed 150,000 in the United States. That's the highest number of fatalities in any nation by far, and accounts for nearly a quarter of the recorded global toll.
Immediately after the 2016 election, I spoke with New Yorker writer Masha Gessen, who, after having lived long under Vladimir Putin, had some advice for anxious Americans trying to navigate the so-called new normal. She explained that for the would-be authoritarian, the lying is the point, that the ability to create a reality flagrantly staring down conspicuous fact is a crucial component of building and sustaining power. And last fall, Vox's David Roberts noted bluntly where such a strategy left unchecked could lead.
The sort of cultish, increasingly authoritarian movement takes over the country. In Russia and Turkey and Poland, right? It's a disturbingly longer and longer list. We see countries that we thought were democracies devolve into this. In the U.S., so much has happened in the last few years that we thought would never happen. I think we should really loosen up our imaginations as to what can happen when a movement that is convinced that everything it knows and loves is in danger of falling apart, a movement that's thinking like that, unconnected anymore to facts or reality, and got its hands on the power of the federal government, is the basic recipe for democracies falling apart.
And so, last fall, On the Media producer Leah Feder reported on one of those places, Poland, a young democracy teetering on unstable ground, and where its far-right nationalist government is intent on rewriting the nation's painful history.
For almost a decade, Poland has been in the grip of a conspiracy theory. What really happened when a plane crashed in a forest in western Russia, killing Poland's president and dozens of other government officials? The plane had been en route to commemorate another Polish tragedy, a massacre that had occurred in the very same location in 1940. a 1973 documentary explored the mystery.
While the German armies advanced from the west, the Soviets crossed Poland's eastern frontiers. Caught in a massive pincer, the Polish army collapsed and surrendered. The victors divided the country down the middle and imprisoned every soldier they captured. Russia took over 200,000. 15,000, half Poland's officer corps, were never seen alive again. Many were to die near Smolensk, in a forest called Katyn.
After decades of opacity and suspicion, an investigation in the early 90s confirmed, finally, that it was not Hitler but Stalin who had ordered the massacre. And so when, on April 10, 2010, a delegation of 96 Polish politicians and officials traveled from Warsaw to Smolensk, it was in service of remembrance and reconciliation. But what happened instead compounded the national pain.
Poland's prime minister burst into tears when he heard the news today that his country's president was killed in a plane crash.
The pilot tried to land in a thick fog at least twice, missing the runway and ignoring the control tower's direction to divert to another city.
Not just losing the president of that country, the first lady, the head of the Army Chief of Staff, the National Security Office head, Deputy Parliament Speaker, the Deputy Foreign Minister.
It was a devastating national tragedy. What's more, the symbolic layering was undeniable. A long-standing tragedy finally solved, and a new one appears in its place. And yet,
in the immediate moments and days after the crash, there was a kind of common shock.
Anne Applebaum is a journalist and academic based in Warsaw. At the time of the 2010 crash, her husband was Minister of Foreign Affairs in the Polish government.
And there was pretty straightforward reporting about what had happened, what was immediately clear. There were people on the ground who saw the crash. So there was a kind of consensus initially about what had happened, that it was a terrible accident and that, you know, many people of value to the nation had died.
But the story started to shift as the investigation into the crash proceeded.
Investigators say pilot error was mostly to blame.
It became clear that one of the causes of the crash was the fact that the pilots were under pressure to land. The president's delegation had arrived late for the plane. They were running behind schedule. As they got closer to Smolensk, which wasn't even really an airport, it was a kind of airstrip in the forest. They began to be worried about the fog.
And the pilots weren't sure they could make the narrow landing. But according to black box recordings, Polish President Lech Kaczynski, head of the opposition party, directed the pilots to do it.
It was meant to be the launch of his reelection campaign. So there were cameras there, which he knew, and he was very anxious to go.
Under pressure, the pilots tried to make the landing. Instead, they hit a tree, killing all 96 people on board.
The president's twin brother, the head of the nationalist right political party in Poland, the same party as the president, he didn't like this story. It made the president look bad. More to the point, this was a terrible crash, very near to a place where an earlier generation of Poles were murdered by the Soviet state. Because of that eeriness, people immediately began to speculate that there was actually a different, deeper story, that perhaps the Russians caused the crash, perhaps there was a bomb on the plane. And conspiracy theories began to proliferate online. The president's brother, Jarosław Kaczynski, began openly alluding to them.
Kaczynski's Law and Justice Party made unraveling the Smolensk conspiracy its key campaign promise.
Once you had bought into their idea that there was a secret conspiracy, possibly involving the Polish prime minister, Donald Tusk, possibly involving the Russians, and that lots of people high up in the state were implicated in some great big secret plot to kill the president. If you believe that, then you can believe a lot of other things. The point was to get people to believe in a kind of alternative reality, to doubt institutions, to doubt that the government was telling them the truth. And that was absolutely an attempt to help win an election.
But it did more than carve out a new electorate. It created new divides in Polish society. Where once Polish politics were split between communists and anti-communists or around economic policy, now it was over a vision of history.
It was how you see Poland's place in the world and whether you think secret dark forces are trying to undermine your country and whether, you know, you need to elect a government of patriots in order to make sure that doesn't happen. Where you fell on that dividing line affected how you would vote and how you would understand politics for the next several years.
And so, When Law and Justice won in 2015, it spawned a new kind of power, a power based on the willingness to embrace the myth.
They fired large numbers of Polish civil servants, Polish members of the Foreign Service, all kinds of people who worked for the government, also leaders and board members of state companies. And they replaced all of them with people whom they were sure were loyal. And one element of the loyalty test was belief in the Smolensk myth.
The Smolensk conspiracy implied that there were dark, mysterious forces continuing to try to manipulate and undermine the Polish nation. It also drew on the larger story of a Poland continually attacked by outsiders and the valiant Polish resistance to threats past and present. Law and Justice rode that narrative to electoral victory, and then rode its electoral victory to further consolidation of that narrative in service of Polish nationalism. Coming up, a right-wing nationalist party comes to power. Its first takeover, the museums. This is On the Media.